Welcome to CERT's podcast series, Security for Business Leaders. The CERT program is part of the Software Engineering Institute, a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about us at CERT.org. Show notes for today's conversation are available at the podcast website. My name is Julia Allen. I'm a senior researcher at CERT working on security governance and executive outreach. Today I'm pleased to introduce Bill Wilson, the manager of CERT's Survivable Enterprise Management Team. We'll be discussing how business leaders can use international standards to help them build an enterprise security program. So, Bill, great to be in Pittsburgh with you. We don't often get in the same place at the same time.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, obviously, from our joint research and efforts, ISO 17799, an international standard called the Code of Practice for Information Security Management, and one of its companion standards, 27001, which describes an information security management system. By most measures, they're considered the leading international standards for information security. So for our listeners, would you briefly describe what these are and what leaders should know about them?
Okay. Well, let's start with 17799, and I think you use the word appropriately that I would direct everyone to, and that is to consider them practice guidelines. Another way to think of them is a handbook of controls.
Oh, okay.
And really they are general principles, in some cases very general principles and guidelines for, as the standard itself would say, initiating, implementing, monitoring, and improving information security management practices within organizations. And they're driven at commonly accepted goals. You have to keep in mind that 17799 or its origins have been around since 1992-93.
So I didn't realize they'd been around that long.
Yeah, so they're tracking to the types of controls that we think of traditionally when we're thinking about confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And that had been out there for some time, and it's still an effective handbook of controls. It did undergo an update in the 2005 timeframe, but that was really more of a reformatting, recategorization.
So some of the major sections, I know there's policy, there's authentication, access control. What are some of kind of the major topic categories?
There are actually 11, what they call control categories. But yes, compliance, policy, access control, risk management.
We can include those in the show notes just to give folks a notional example. And then, you know, this whole 27,000 series, 27001, which describes the information security management system, which is basically the cycle that you go through to put practices in place. Again, say a little bit more about that and what business leaders should know about it.
It really can be boiled down and, in fact, is organized and structured around a plan, do, check, act cycle.
That makes good sense. So, based on your work and the various experiences that you've had, what are the advantages of using, whether it's these standards or other standards, a standards-based approach to security versus some other method? And kind of what's the cost, any notions about the cost-benefit of taking a standards-based approach?
I'll start with the first question in terms of the advantages. As I said, the 17799 Handbook of Controls has been around for some time. I would say in 90% of the cases, these are controls and categories that should be familiar to information security and, to some extent, information technology professionals. So there is familiarity there. It's also in a common language. And more importantly, I think over time, you know, in the roughly 15 years that the standard has been in existence, those are fairly, they have a good track record, mm-hmm. Proven and tested within organizations and by practitioners. When you combine that handbook of controls with 27001 as the process-based approach, I think for an organization looking for, lacking a better term, a recipe of perhaps how to build an effective security management program, it's an excellent starting point.
Would it be fair to say, based on this kind of this legacy and history, that would you go so far as to say that it's possible to benchmark yourself against others in the community who have also adopted that set of standards?
Yes. There's certainly a benefit in that it's an international standard. The amount of practitioners, both by number as well as across industry sectors, is very, very broad. So there's an opportunity for an organization to compare itself against its peers, to use 27001 perhaps to look at its supply chain upstream and downstream, perhaps in using it to require conformance and approach it that way, as well as over time, And over, certainly over the last 2 years, 27,001 has built a fairly large community of practice that a practitioner can tap into.
Okay.
And then the last advantage I would characterize this as a support system. As it is an international standard, as there is an auditable component, as there is a certification process, there are a number of resources, both in the public and private domain, that organizations can draw on for reference or assistance in using 27,001 or 17799.
So quite a rich set of resources to draw upon to help inform and educate.
Correct.
So when a business leader is considering using these standards to put their program in place or maybe to benchmark their current program, what are some of the key roles that need to be involved and what are some of the first steps to take?
Well, let me actually answer that by pointing you to a negative example. And that's because I feel there's a need to keep one standard, or actually the Handbook of Controls, in the context of the larger 27,001 standard. We, in our experience, continually run into organizations who are following what I would call the Nike model. Just do it.
Just do it.
And they're gravitating towards the do part of the Plan, Do, Check, Act without having done sufficient planning. And those are organizations that are starting with the Handbook of Controls and are using that as a reference. And when you approach them or they answer the question of how are they proceeding with their 27,001 or 17799 approach, they're saying, well, we've chosen a particular control group where we feel there's a need, and we're just marching through that in a checklist fashion. As a place to start for an organization that perhaps is in its infancy, not a bad tack to take, but really it's needing to put those controls and the risk-based selection and then treatment into the context of the organization and the information security management system that it's trying to build, which is where 27,001 comes into play. So my first argument would be, first step is to start with 27,001 versus 17,799. An important component, since you are talking about an organizational-based improvement activity, is obviously to have sponsorship, right, and awareness. Know what you're getting into, because this is going to take time. It's a process-based approach, which is going to require care and feeding to sustain it, and so you really need to appreciate what the investment's going to be internally in terms of resources and cost, as well as what might be required externally. Another critical issue is scoping, in terms of whether you're going to build a management system that looks across the organization, or perhaps relegated initially to selected business units.
Right, because you might actually want to pilot it or do a trial balloon before you commit the whole organization.
Right. What systems or business processes might you choose to include or exclude? You know, a large number of decisions are required by the organization to properly scope it. One, so it meets their needs. Two, also so treating it like a project that, you know, you're building towards a successful pilot or implementation from the first instantiation.
Okay, well, those are good places and good considerations for getting started. So is it best to build this capability in-house from what you've seen, you know, kind of build up your own core competence, or is it better to use an outside service provider? What are some of the pros and cons?
It is... there are advantages and disadvantages to each. I think one of the things I'd want listeners to know is, in my mind, one of the hallmarks of success is being able to put 27,001 as well as the standards or controls prescribed in 17799 in the context of the business environment. That's not going to come easily to an outsider. And so whether you decide to use a lot of outside resources or do it in-house, I think the organizations need to understand what their commitment will be in terms of providing and mining that information in terms of really what assets are under the purview of this approach, what really are the business goals and needs that you're looking for security to buttress or help assist you in. And so while a lot of this and a lot of services are available to, you know, outsource or leave this to an experienced service provider, the need to provide that context and guidance from an organizational perspective will always be critical. So there'll always be a need for a collaborative approach and involvement by the organization if they choose to do some of the activities outside. But in terms of going in-house, you know, it helps to for the organization to have a familiarity with process improvement concepts, certainly if they have similar experience with ISO 9001 or in the SEI vernacular capability maturity model. Things like that, they're aware of some of the opportunities and pitfalls that they may find as they undertake such an organizational level activity. And there is a lot of resources in terms of the standards themselves, guidance, community experience that are available to no or little cost to the organization if it wants to do this itself. However, as I mentioned, there's a fairly robust cottage industry in terms of outside consultants, outside of evaluators.
Okay, so it sounds like much of the same thinking that you would want to apply to any kind of make or buy decision, you
right.
would want to apply to this process as well. Okay, so this sounds like, I mean, you've got this body of knowledge, you've got a community, you've got various approaches, specifications, certification. This sounds like, you know, kind of a no-brainer in terms of why wouldn't I march down this path. So based on your observations and experience, what have you found to be some of the challenges or maybe the barriers in building a standards-based security program?
I think the challenge is, well, first you have to recognize that this is a process-based approach driven by risk assessment or risk management. At the end of the day, the bridge between 27001 and 17799 is the risk assessment that is practiced and the results and how they're acted upon, which really serves as the gap analysis by which the organization determines what from this cookbook or collection or handbook of controls is applicable to my organization and its assets.
So the risk assessment or the risk assessment results being what guide you in determining what actions to take.
Correct. And not just being there to guide you, but also that the assessment is undertaken and documented in such a way that, for lack of a better word, those results are defensible.
Mm-hmm.
One of the critical elements of 27001 is the creation or documentation of an SOA, a statement of applicability, and that's the filter through which an organization looks at the list of controls or categories of controls in 17799, which is to say we've looked at our critical business processes, deemed and determined which assets are critical, undertaken a rigorous approach to identify the relevant risk to those assets, and have come up with these required mitigation steps or risk treatment options. Those risk treatment options drive the control selection decision and determine which of those controls in 17799 are appropriate and which are not. In terms of whether or not an organization is compliant with 27001, it really comes down to, was the risk assessment undertaken completely and effectively such that the risk treatment plans address the high priority risks and have led to effective risk-based and cost-based decision-making on the part of management as to which of those controls are applicable and which are not.
So then that is what you mean by defensible. In
yes.
other words, that you can take that whole set of process steps and you can relate the conclusions that for the controls that you selected all the way back to, you know, your risk assessment and the critical assets that you're trying to protect.
Right. And going so far in documentation that you're not just doing it to say, I have followed the steps advocated in the standard, but I followed the steps advocated in the standard and I have produced results that tie back to my business needs and the organization's assets. So I can say that I made these decisions based on the risks and needs of the organization, not necessarily the mechanics or the process that's advocated in either of the guidelines or standard.
I mean, the way you've described this, it seems very rational. It seems very straightforward. And yet, you know, a lot of organizations are not undertaking this kind of rigorous approach. I know that leaders have many, many considerations for their time, for their attention, for their investment dollars. So what do you think has been a barrier perhaps to more wider spread adoption of such a standard-based approach?
The easy answer for me is that the devil, as they say, is in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, when I'm giving you a high-level description, I'm not giving you much more than what is in the 27001 standard. I mean, the document itself is roughly 45 to 48 pages, and again, does an effective high-level job of describing what needs to be done. But there are a number of processes, a number of practices, a number of tools that are required to populate that for an organization to efficiently and effectively get to the position where they can be making those risk-based, you know, control selection decisions. And I think that is the point where oftentimes a lot of organizations struggle.
Kind of lose their collective will.
They don't have the experience, or perhaps they aren't being pointed to a solution that is effective or applicable to their organization, or oftentimes they may jump over that and, you know, go right into a non-defensible selection of controls, or return to where their comfort level is, being driven by more by the technology than a lot of the business context and information that's captured in the early stages of 27001.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, sometimes you get into something like this, as you talked earlier, you know, do your planning, do your strategy, do your thinking up front, but you get into this and then you realize it's a much larger undertaking than you originally planned for.
Right. Another Achilles heel for organizations is relegating this to the information technology or information security program. I mean, oftentimes that's the source of the original onus to pursue 27001 or the sponsorship. But hopefully I've given you appreciation, at least in the early stages of defining and implementing the ISMS, that, you know, a lot of context and information is required from the business units and the business areas. And so without their involvement, without their information and buy-in, you're not going to get the benefits or be able to pursue the holistic approach that the 27001 advocates.
I'd asked you a little bit earlier about roles. Are there some key roles that need to be participants? And you mentioned the business unit leaders. You want to obviously get advocacy and support from the key stakeholders. But what would you say are kind of the handful of key roles that you've seen really make this a go in an organization?
While they may not have this title, I think a key role is the project manager. I think one of the elements of success for 27001 or any initiative of this type is for the organization to treat it like the fairly broad, encompassing project that it is, and, you know, to make sure that they are doing the requisite planning in the style and using the tools and approaches that the organization is familiar with, not just to satisfy 27001, but, you know, to run this like a project, to staff it, communicate it, track it like they would any similarly sized initiative within the organization. So it may not be the leader or sponsor of the activity, but you really need to have somebody managing the day-to-day details of the rollout of this activity. Obviously, there's a need for initially, you know, some level of outreach and awareness. So somebody should be given responsibility for communicating the background on the process, preparing the organization and informing it of what it's going to be going through, what the information that is required and what the level of involvement will be from various aspects, be it, you know, business units, administrative areas like HR, and certainly the information technology and information security department. And then there are the roles in terms of the sponsor, the leader. I mean, traditionally, a multidimensional project team is created to lead the organization through a 27001 activity. And 27001 itself, as well as some of the common references, go into this in much more detail. I would refer organizations to those to learn more about the specific roles. Obviously, if you're looking at 27001 from a certification aspect, the internal audit group plays a role. The certification process is actually two-tiered. It involves an internal audit preceded by a third-party external audit. And so obviously if that is a goal of the organization in 27001, you would want to involve that group from the beginning, not just for what they bring to the table in terms of an improvement initiative in their involvement, just to help with gap analysis control selection, but also to have them prepared to present the defensible results to that third-party auditor.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that point you mentioned about making it a legitimized project within the organization, because I know so many of the efforts I've seen, you know, you get all the key stakeholders in the room and you somehow expect them to add this to
right.
their existing set of roles and responsibilities with no additional resource, no additional time, just something additional that the organization has to take on.
Correct.
And so the notion of creating it as a legitimized project like any other acquisition, any new product line, any new service, any new IT initiative with the same reporting structures and requirements, I think is, you know, as you say, kind of key to success. What about sustainability? So you've put a program in place. You do have some good definitions. You've done your risk assessment. Do you find any nuances or special requirements in terms of actual continuous improvement or sustainment of this type of program?
We've talked about some of the generic benefits for organizations. But at the end of the day, right, that organization's unique operating environment must be considered. And so it may be pursuing 27001 for regulatory and compliance reasons, but it's certainly, particularly in today's business climate, not going to be the only piece of legislation or regulation that says something about how that organization needs to approach information security or information protection. And so enough flexibility has to be introduced into the approach that you can make that translation to show where, you know, 27001 activity is supporting, or in some cases may not be completely supporting, you know, the compliance activities of the organization. I think another issue of sustainability is recognizing that 27001 and 17799 are a starting point, and just that. They are giving you a logical bridge to effectively guide you to control selections when considering those controls within 7799 in those 11 categories and the 130 or 140 odd controls. All the controls that an organization needs, particularly for perhaps for some of its most unique and critical assets, are not going to be in that
list,
in that handbook.
Right.
They may come up with a recipe where, you know, the ingredients that they're looking for are not to be found in 17799. So they need to be prepared to go beyond what's advocated and recognize that at times they may need to, you know, go outside the rigor, the discipline of the standard to really meet with their
security requirements. Would it be fair to say that if there are additional controls or practices or activities that need to be included for compliance or other reasons, that the information security management system that 27001 lays out could be used for the insertion of those additional practices and controls? In other words, you could still have your same plan, do, check, act improvement cycle and just enrich
yes.
a set of controls beyond what's in 17799.
Yes, conceptually that is how it works and how it should work. But again, keeping in mind that 27001 is focusing on the what.
Mm-hmm.
It's not giving organizations that much on the how, and so there's a need to seek additional guidance, perhaps seek other references to help put in place the effective practices that will allow you to realize just that outcome, Julia.
Okay, so this may not be a fair question to ask, but if I do...
That's fine. Those are the kinds I like.
So if I, as an organizational leader, adopt these standards, will I keep myself out of the headlines with respect to security breaches or other types of things that would put me above the fold with respect to security?
It represents a significant starting point in first effort. You know, I think it gives you it lays or can lay for the organization the blueprint for effective protection. But that sustainment is key, right? We know, you know, and you know, looking at a house building analogy, right, the importance of the foundation and how we build upon all those aspects to get to the details of, right, where we will put the locks, where will, you know, where the doors will be. That architecture will come from pursuing 27001, but it's the day-to-day management of operational activities and making sure that the right people are in the right place at the right time to make sure that the controls are not just implemented, but are in the end effective, right, and can be traced back to managing the risks. If the organization adopts the process improvement and process-based strategic view of security that's advocated by 27001, it will allow itself to realize some of the flexibility so that as its risk environment changes, as its available controls on both the operational management and technical side change, it has begun to put in place that process and therefore that discipline by which it can adapt, which I think is key to, you know, being able to adequately protect the organization and hopefully keep the right folks out of the headlines and maybe out of jail. Yes.
So just to close, I know that there are some future plans for the whole 27,000 series of standards. Can you say a little bit about a preview of coming attractions there?
The first thing is the simplest one, and that's to bring the numbering scheme in line. I think one of the initial parts or initial places where folks get confused is 27001 versus 17799 and the fact that the handbook of controls actually preceded the auditable standard. So 27001 is the definition or requirement specification for the ISMS. Down the road, 17799 will convert to 27002. Which brings the numbering scheme into line and also speaks to the progression. Consider 27001 in the process and framework first as a bridge to the selection of controls in the handbook. And then there are plans out of ISO to produce at least three more in that series, 27003, 27004, and 27005. 27003 have been deemed the implementation guidelines, so they will begin at a high level to get to some of the hows that are prescribed in 27001 and will begin to speak to what should organizations consider in the policy space. How can they link some of these things to their activities and at least security governance? What type of approaches in more detail are advocated or recommended in risk assessment? So that's 27003. 27004 will be their first attempt to get into the metrics and measurement space. And then 27005 will actually expand on 27003 by specifically making recommendations in the risk assessment space as they recognize that that really is the crucial tool or process that it's the engine or greases the wheel of a 27001 standards-based approach in this context.
Well, I'm so appreciative of your expertise and comments and thoughts on this. We'll include links to a lot of the references that you've called out in our show notes. In closing, are there any kind of final thoughts or remarks that you'd like to share, or have we pretty much covered it?
You know, there is a large community out there. There are, you know, conferences, publications just around each of the handbooks. There are more resources where individuals and organizations can learn. And again, as long as you keep 27001 in context as a place to start to begin to pursue a process-based approach to information security, I think more organizations than not will find 27001 and some of its principles and guidelines to be very applicable on in putting them and keeping them on the road to effective information security management.
Well, great, Bill. Thanks very much, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you.